Today's broadcast was originally recorded on December 18th, 2025.
Everything else is falling rapidly, and it's not done yet. But boy, are we making progress. Nobody can believe what's going on.
Oh, you got that right, brother. Good Lord.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it is not.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. We have got two of our favorite guests, Digby and Driftglass, both standing by to join us momentarily. But as this is our last show for 2025, and before they come on to bunk our high, as usual, I just want to get in just one more very quick election result coverage this year that might tide you over until our return. On Tuesday night this week, in a special election for a vacant seat in Kentucky's State Senate District 37, we saw yet another overperformance by a Democrat as local Steelworkers Union president, U.S. Army veteran Gary Clemens, defeated Republican Calvin Leach in a 47-point landslide victory, taking almost 73% of the vote, according to the unofficial results today. The victory in the south part of Louisville was in a Democratic area. However, Vice President Kamala Harris carried that jurisdiction by only about 6 points last year, resulting this week in what Democrats are describing as a 42-point shift in favor of Team Blue, with Clemens' win this week. As the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee notes, Democrats have now won or overperformed in 227 of what the group considers to be 255 key elections over this past year. That is winning or overperforming in nearly 90% of their targeted races. Quote, state Democrats are overperforming and winning special elections across every part of the country, said DLCC President Heather Williams in a statement to Newsweek, adding, quote, momentum is on our side as voters turn away from MAGA Republicans and back state Democrats who are fighting to lower costs. A 42-point overperformance from the top of the ticket just over 1 year ago in a 47-point landslide victory in Kentucky. There you have it, our last election result report for the year. Here also to bunk our high today, as always, is the delightful Desi Doyen. You will have, hi Des.
Hi.
You will have our latest and last Green News report of the year before all is said and done today.
Yep.
And by the way, sorry if I have having trouble hearing you, Desiree. I was barked at by a crazy old man last night for about 20 continuous minutes. So I'm still trying to recover my hearing today for some reason.
Yeah.
Forgive me.
It was very screamy.
It was. As AP noted on Wednesday night, Donald Trump has previously said that he thinks more Americans would back him if they simply heard him describe his track record. Well, I think everybody heard him last night. He was so loud you might have even heard him even if you had your television off, as he convinced the networks to interrupt primetime programming for his 18-minute rant to tout his own political record, or at least what he seems to think is his record, though I'm not sure if more Americans will be backing him after what they saw and heard last night. We will see what our guests think about that in a moment. Trump's poll numbers as of Wednesday remained at or near record lows, including on stuff that his supporters and many in the media used to believe and or pretend that he was strong on, like the economy, about which a new PBS-NPR Marist poll on Wednesday, wrapping up the year, found him to have the approval of just 36% of Americans on the economy, a new low for him. His overall job approval rating in the same poll is not much better, with a meager 38% of Americans thinking he's doing well overall. But that's better than the new poll out yesterday from AP NORC, which found his approval rating at just 36%. But his televised rant from the diplomatic room of the White House was mostly a nonstop angry shout of various numbers, a very good portion of which were simply ridiculous, such as his claim that he, quote, negotiated directly with the drug companies and foreign nations, which were taking advantage of our country for many decades, to slash prices on drugs and pharmaceuticals by as much as 400, 500, and even 600%, which is a lot of percent. In fact, it's an impossible percent unless someone is actually paying you to take those drugs. And where he wasn't ranting about numbers, he was blaming Joe Biden for anything that wasn't the greatest in the history of the nation, the likes of which nobody has ever seen before or even thought possible. He said, quote, at levels never seen before or at record levels, at least seven times in his brief, very loud remarks, he referred to at least 11 different records, whatever that means, that he has broken over the past year. He cited history, as in never before in American history, at least 12 times, and he blamed Joe Biden for his own failures at least seven times. But I'll turn over the fact-checking to the tireless national treasure from Canada, Dan Dale of CNN, for just a few of the obligatory post-Trump rant fact-checks. God bless him.
So many of these claims have been debunked so many times. The president said inflation has stopped. It's 3%. In fact, September, that 3% rate was the fifth consecutive month inflation had increased. The president also said that he inherited the worst inflation. He said some might say in the history of the country. Again, he inherited 3% inflation in January, nowhere close to the all-time high of more than 23%. He spoke of cutting prescription drug prices by 400 to 600%. Those figures are mathematically impossible. If you cut it by more than 100%, people would get paid to get their medications. He said everything else is falling rapidly. Everything else is not falling rapidly. In fact, even on groceries in particular, far more products have increased in price this term than have decreased. He said again he secured $18 trillion in investment this year. That number is total fiction. Even the White House website uses a figure of $9.6 trillion, and my detailed review found that that figure is a wild exaggeration. He spoke of some states hitting $1.99 for gas. The lowest state average today is closer to $2.40. He also talked about immigration, made false claims there, saying that an army of 25 million people invaded the country under President Biden. It was under 11 million, and that counts millions of people who were rapidly expelled from the country. Crime was nowhere close to record high under President Biden. President Trump has not settled eight wars. That list includes various wars, various situations that were not even wars, and some conflicts that have not actually been resolved. I could go on. I don't have time.
None of us do. The only actual news of note, I believe, from his manic, shouty, angry speech, other than the helpful reminder yet again that the nation and world might wish to be terrified that this man is actually president of the United States, is that he claims to be sending a so-called warrior dividend of $1,776, get it, to each of the military's 1.4 million members. What authority he has for doing that is not exactly clear, but he claimed it comes from the tariffs that he has levied on imported goods that have cost Americans billions of dollars. In fact, as reporting from the national security industry outlet Defense One suggests today, it's actually money that has been appropriated by Congress for military housing that Trump appears to be commandeering and rebranding as so-called warrior dividend checks. But whatevs. Even folks on the MAGA right appeared to be confused and or put off by what they saw on Wednesday night. For example, Matt Walsh, a right-wing political commentator, a longtime MAGA Trump supporter, and of course, a podcaster, was among those slamming Donald Trump after the address, writing on social media, quote, "That was perhaps the most pointless primetime presidential address ever delivered in American history." He should have added, "the likes of which we have never seen and nobody even thought possible." Another MAGA voice who calls themselves Majestic Glow, has tens of thousands of followers, wrote, quote, "Remember when Joe Biden and his administration would tell us how great things were and we all loudly rejected that BS? Trump and his administration are doing the same thing." Of course, those folks are on the right. Let's see how folks not on the right feel about whatever the hell happened last night, and more importantly, a whole bunch of other related stuff as we close out the year and head into a new one. Joining us for the final time this year, I am almost certain, are two of my fellow longtime OG bloggers, including the great Heather Digby Parton, much beloved longtime blogger at Digby's Hullabaloo, and award-winning Salon columnist, often known only as Digby. Good day, Ms. Parton.
Glad to be here.
Delighted
Merry
to have
Christmas.
You here. And
happy
to you.
Holidays.
Oh, we're allowed to say Merry Christmas again, I guess.
I'm so grateful.
Of course, the no less beloved blogger and broadcaster, known almost entirely as simply Driftglass, but occasionally as Bill. He's the co-host of the Professional Left podcast with his wife, known as Fran or Blue Gal, as recorded each week from what they lovingly describe the cornfields of flyover country, Illinois. Oh, hello, Mr. Bill.
Merry Christmas and happy Hanukkah.
There
and
you go.
Everything else that we all wish for each other.
There you go. Well, says you. Now, I don't want to waste waste too much more time on it here than I already have. We've got a lot to get to, but let's start with Digby. I know you wrote about Trump's remarks on Wednesday night at the White House. I know you wrote about it at Salon today, but I actually purposely did not read it because as not to be influenced in my own thoughts and in hopes of being surprised. So what did you make of Donald Trump's primetime speech from the White House on Wednesday? And do you think he has more or fewer supporters in its wake?
I couldn't guess about the supporters because I've lost all sense of anything making sense among the American electorate. So mm-hmm. I honestly can't say, but I can say that he had one great supporter, someone who stepped up immediately after the speech, went on to Sean Hannity and said that the speech was worthy of Ronald Reagan. It was that good, that only Ronald Reagan could have given a speech with all those facts in it and done it, yeah, right from beginning to end, which I thought was kind of hilarious. That person was Newt Gingrich, who also had this to say. He said that this means that the Republicans are going to win the House and they're going to keep the House, gain a bunch of seats, including in the Senate, and they're going to sail into 2028 because of this speech. I just want to remind everybody, Newt Gingrich in 1998 was the Speaker of the House, and he told everybody that the Republicans were going to gain seats in 1998 in that off-year election during the Lewinsky, crisis. And they ended up losing seats, almost lost the majority, and Gingrich lost his seat. He not only lost the speakership, he actually resigned from his seat in 1998. So I think you can take him, he's a guy who really has a lot of credibility when it comes to calling things like this. So, that's how I see it. I think that he's probably speaking for a lot of MAGA people who really felt like this was a brilliant, brilliant speech.
Did they really?
I don't know what they think, Brad. I mean, how do we know? These people are crazy. And so is he. And I'm just looking at this and I said, what kind of person watched that gibbering clown last night? I went, wow, that's a great president there. I mean, it was like the guy had four gigantic big gulp Diet Cokes from 7-Eleven before he went on there. He was manic. What was that? He was screaming. He was angry. It was awful.
It was really something. Driftglass, your thoughts on whatever that was last night. And by the way, if you can't trust Newt Gingrich's political analysis, I don't know what's come of this world. But I'm curious what your thoughts were, Driftglass. And do you think that Trump actually believes that nonsense about his own record, all of those crazy numbers that he was giving, that he's done a job on the economy that he described as A++++? Does he actually believe that stuff?
I think it's clear that Donald Trump has made a career out of lying to people about the size of things and the excellence of things and the gold cladding of things. And now he is just a living sales pitch. He doesn't actually belief doesn't enter into it. It's this autopilot he drops into, which is sell to the rubes and the chumps, and just everything's the best, everything's the biggest, everything's the most awesome. Anyone who says different is a traitor, and so forth.
But those are things that can be checked. I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, if you elect me, I'm gonna lower prices on day one. It's a different thing to say, I have lowered prices and XYZ is down, 1-3%. I mean, you have to be a certain sort of twisted to think you can say these things, which are so obviously provably wrong.
Yeah, because facts matter, Brad. Because they're so important these days. No, I think you're right. I mean, you can't outshout kitchen table math. You know, the price of things, the fact that your ACA supports are about to go away, you can't outshout that. You can shout about foreign people eating dogs and cats. You can do that, and the rube will buy that. But you can't outshout math. On the other hand, if you've ever read 1984, you know that 1 week the chocolate rations are going to go down. The next week, Big Brother announces chocolate rations are up. And it's just a matter of telling the rubes what you want them to think. And they are so sunk cost bought in to Donald Trump. They will, I don't know if they believe it or not, but they know if they don't believe it, then the whole thing comes crashing down. So they need to, there's a thing in aeronautics, I think, called the Jesus nut. It's this bolt nut combination that holds the entire helicopter assembly together, and without it you pray to Jesus because you're not going to survive. And Donald Trump is that to them. He is the thing holding it all together, so whatever crazy crap he says, they have to believe it, they have to go along with it, because the alternative is the abyss, and they damn well know it.
Wow. Well, never mind concerns about Donald Trump's, own mental health and his whatever he's going through. Let's talk about health care for the American people, since you mentioned the ACA, which Trump and Republicans have slashed by actually trillions of dollars, most immediately for the Affordable Care Act, the ACA, or Obamacare. It's set to skyrocket. Monthly premium set to skyrocket for millions as of January 1. It now appears that Republicans are really going to allow this to happen for some reason, despite Democrats' best efforts to sort of help Republicans, save them from themselves. So, Driftglass, how is this about to go over out there in flyover country, as you see it? And what are Republicans possibly thinking here?
Well, I can say that we're on the exchange. We're ACA family, and the healthcare costs for my wife and our youngest child are going to quadruple as of January 1st.
Quadruple.
Go up to $2,500 and change per month, which we can't possibly afford. So we recognize the fact that there are millions of people like us out there, and they're just pretending it's going to be okay. I mean, the people who pay attention to these things and care about these things and are deeply, deeply worried about these things. But the people who don't just aren't. They're just wishing it'll all work itself out. And the local social media is full of, thank God we can say Christmas again, Merry Christmas again. And gas is down to like pennies. So they're just in complete denial about this stuff, which is going to be, that look on their face when they look at their bill and it's gone double, triple, or quadruple. And not just for them. I want to emphasize this. Local rural hospitals are going to get crushed by this. So even if you have insurance, if your local hospital shuts down because of no one can afford to go there anymore, you've lost your doctor, you lost your hospital. So this is going to have a knock-on effect to people who still have insurance.
Right. Yeah.
And it's going to be devastating. And they're holding the bag. And I think the only solution is for MAGA people, blame Mike Johnson and blame John Thune, because they can't blame the dear leader because he is infallible and all-knowing and all-seeing. So that's how it's going down out here. Complete denial and prayer. That's about it. Mm.
So just to underscore that again, since you brought up that number, I wouldn't otherwise say it myself, but $2,500 a month is going to cost you beginning January 1. What was it over the past year?
700 and change.
And it's a family of four.
Two.
Oh, just the two. No,
just my wife and I graduated to Medicare now. So. Yeah. You know, I'm full socialist, baby. You know, I'm doing fine.
Oh, man.
But this is my family we're talking about. This is very personal to us. Fran, my wife, Blue Gal, was monitoring the ACA debate from day one.
Yeah.
And tears up and down. She's an expert on this stuff. And it is, we've decided to stop riding the roller coaster because God knows what, you know, the future will bring. But Democrats have tried everything we can think of. I think it's just a legacy of, this is one of those solemn, we hate the Kenyan usurper Barack Obama so much, we have to get rid of everything he's ever touched. That's why the plaque in the White House says what it does now.
Right.
And it's that icky Barack Obama stuff we have to get rid of.
I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, if that is what they're thinking, it is, to say the least, ill-considered, I think, what's going to bounce back at them after the first of the year. Digby, the agreement that seven Democrats and one independent, the caucuses with them in the Senate, signed on to in November to reopen the government after the nation's longest shutdown in history, while Democrats insisted on restoring the GOP cuts to the ACA, to the subsidies and to Medicaid. That agreement will end as of January 30th, I believe. Digby, are we headed for yet another shutdown in the new year? I guess I'm wondering, do Dems have the stomach and or the backbone for another one? Will they need to, or do you get any sign that Republicans are coming to their senses here?
Well, no, the Republicans are not coming to their senses. They're trying different things. There are people in the House that they did this discharge petition that will allow another vote in the House to actually just extend just do a clean extension through for 3 years, which is the answer, right? I mean, this is what should happen. It's the obvious choice, or as far as I'm concerned, just extend them forever. This is just the way it should be. And I saw Mike Lawler, who's the New York House member, he's in a swing district. And he was one of the people who signed the discharge petition. He said, well, I don't really think this is great. I think we should extend it, but with reforms and blah, blah, blah. But we couldn't get that done. He was really mad at the House Speaker, Mike Johnson, over his inability to kind of push that thing through that they had tried to put together. And he says he thinks that it'll be fixed in the Senate. I doubt it. I mean, I don't know. Maybe, like I said, I'm not in the prediction business anymore. I have no idea how this is going.
Well, in other words, when you say, hold the thought, but you're suggesting that Mike Lawler, I suspect the soon-to-be former congressman from New York, Republican, he only now just signed on to the Democrats' discharge petition, extends it for 3 years. He thinks, okay, I'll go ahead and vote for it here in the House and somehow they'll fix it over in the Senate. I don't even know that it's going to pass. I don't even know that it's going to pass.
I don't think it is
in the Senate.
Yeah. I don't think it is. And I think here's the problem. It's exactly what Driftglass said. I'm more cynical about this probably than you guys are. I think they're happy. I think that the vast majority of the Republican caucus in both the House and the Senate are happy to let the subsidies expire because they know they're going to lose next fall. I think they all see the writing on the wall. And they figure the one thing we did was we destroyed Obamacare. That's been in there. That's been on their agenda from the very beginning. Mm. It's what they wanted to do. And if they get nothing else out of this whole mess, they get that. They destroyed Obamacare. And I think that's really what many of them are thinking. They don't care how many people suffer. They don't care what they're doing to people. And by the way, you know, it isn't just, I mean, the subsidies are bad. There's also, you know, the VA is firing 35,000 people, or have fired and aren't going to replace them. The VA is going to fall apart over the next year as well. So every government-sponsored program, with the exception of Medicare, which seems to be safe for the moment, mostly because old people vote, a lot of them vote Republican, they are destroying that. And so this whole healthcare debacle, I think they're happy to see this happen, because this is their great white whale, right? I mean, great black whale, I guess, in the case of Obamacare. And I think that they're going to let it expire. I think they're going to let it do it. And then Trump will come along with some, you know, crazy scheme that he's got. Oh, we're just going to write people some checks and everything will be great. And suddenly everybody can afford everything and they can do whatever they want and everybody will have great health care. That's that. And, you know, when you talk about him and, you know, what he hopes to accomplish, whether or not he believes what he's saying, he doesn't know anything about health care. He's completely ignorant on every level about healthcare. He absolutely does not understand it. And so I think what he believes, though, is that he has this magical power to convince people to, you know, that whatever he says is real and they can believe him or they can believe their lying eyes. And I think an awful lot of Republicans believe that too. And they believe it because he's overcome these obstacles to impeachments, you know, an insurrection, felony convictions, everything, and now he's president again. So they just that's all it is that we're dealing with now. Well, which is, Trump is magic. Let him do whatever he wants. And that's it. Well, there's nothing more to it.
I would happen to agree with you. I guess we're both extremely cynical, Heather, because I also think that the vast majority of congressional Republicans have zero interest in really actually helping out Americans with their health care. Yep. It's a fetish with them. That's just one thing that they just cannot wait to make sure that Americans have to pay for through the nose, well, just like you said.
Well, listen, to Heather's point, Bill, it's one thing. Yes, they can say we finally killed Obamacare. They can say we finally killed the VA if they're going to, you know, fire 35,000 people. There's all sorts of things that they can destroy. We talked about it on yesterday's show that they're, you know, he's dismantling the National Atmospheric
Center for Atmospheric Research.
But the problem is, it's kind of like, you know, the dog catching the car. It's one thing to, you know, call for, you know, drowning the government in a bathtub, how they used to explain that. That works out great for the really, really wealthy people and the private companies that are going to, you know, pick up the slack. But it does not work for their voters, which I think is something those voters are likely to figure out, and maybe sooner rather than later.
That is true. I mean, it's going to hit them in the pocketbook. I think... This is probably not the day for this, but there's a wider conversation to be had, because we're doing a 2025 retrospective on the Professional Left podcast. And having gone through the details, the nitty-gritty of the last year, this country is now a different country than it was in 2024. We have become a different place. We've lost our innocence. This happened after the Vietnam War, the civil rights movement. But fundamentally, this country has changed in ways that we do not understand yet. But whatever happens after Trump, it's going to be a different place than you and I and all of us grew up in. And part of that is that there is now a solid block of 36% of the American public who are just insane, who just don't believe anything. And when these prices crash, when everything goes wrong, they'll blame a Democrat, they'll blame a liberal, they'll blame Barack Obama, they'll blame Franklin Roosevelt. They will take no responsibility for it, and they will elect people who will stand in the way of progress until there's a Democratic supermajority in both houses and can force them back into the sewers from which they came.
Well, right now, though, that might be the case right now, this year in 2025. But doesn't that sidewalk end at some point when they say, well, look, we've had, Republicans in charge in the White House, in both houses of Congress for the past year. And now I'm paying more for everything, including my health care, and I can't get an appointment at the VA, and, you know, everything else that has been cut and gutted. Doesn't that run out at some point? And they realize, actually, they're not insane, as you suggest. They were just brainwashed and, you know, brain poisoned by this guy. And this is not actually what they want. Seems like there's got to be a realization of that at some point. Am I wrong?
Let me refer you back to the Iraq War and the Bush administration. After the Bush administration collapsed, the Iraq War was a disaster. Katrina was a disaster. There was going to be a moment of reckoning, man. They were going to learn their lesson. The base was going to learn their lesson. Did the base learn their lesson? No, they did not. There was a global economic collapse on George Bush's watch. Did they learn anything? No, they didn't. What they did was they put on funny hats and they got themselves some Gadsden flags and they called themselves the Tea Party and they pretended they never heard of George Bush and it was all Barack Obama's fault. And the legacy media went right along with it. They just bulldozed the entire Bush administration down the memory hole, and this was all Obama's fault. And Barack Obama, the Kenyan usurper, who wasn't even born here, Brad, was to blame for everything. So you're right, but you're dealing with a group of people who are substantially different emotionally, existentially, psychology than you are. They simply don't, they're not wired like us anymore. And so they're willing to, they're going to take a huge hit, but they're going to look for scapegoats, not solutions. And that's tragic and it's dangerous.
Meanwhile, in Congress, there are some people there on the right who are, you know, playing along with this, but actually, I think, are wired like us. They know that this thing is a scam, but they're going to continue it as long as they can. Heather, you opined at Salon recently that Mike Johnson's speakership is in trouble. You wrote that as the GOP stares at the likelihood of a possible electoral bloodbath in the 2026 midterms, he may not last through the next year. While he won't have to deal with his nemesis, Marjorie Taylor Greene, anymore, the rebellion she started has become a full-fledged insurrection in what's become a GOP tradition. The ousting of the speaker is likely to come sooner rather than later. The only question is, you write, who in the world would want that thankless job? Which is an excellent question. It makes me wonder, you know, if anybody would want it. I mean, it's like being named the new drummer for Spinal Tap at this point, you know, with a sad nod in the direction of Rob Reiner, the late Rob Reiner. Doesn't that serve the fact that nobody wants this job, Heather? Doesn't that sort of serve as job protection for Mike Johnson?
I think it would be, except for the fact that, you know, number one, there's always some ambitious person who's willing to do it, think they can do it better. You know, there's Steve Scalise is still out there you know, beating the drum. Hey, Elise Stefanik, I'm sure she'd take it if given the chance. I mean, there are plenty of people who might want to do that job. I mean, I was being facetious when I wrote that, who would want it. But the fact is that this is, you know, the Republicans have been like this for a quarter of a century. I mean, and I just mentioned Newt Gingrich earlier. He's one. Who, you know, I mean, he was on the cover of Time magazine, the Kingmaker, you know, the king, and he was, you know, the greatest, you know, Republican statesman, you know, in the world, and blah, blah, blah. And he couldn't keep it together. They actually defenestrated him too. And it, you know, this goes on over and over again. In recent years, it's go to John Boehner, who had a much bigger majority, by the way. Mike Johnson tried to blame this all on having a small majority. It happened to John Boehner, too. And he had a big majority, and they got rid of him. Paul Ryan, he was so traumatized by it, he left politics altogether. You know, you had Kevin McCarthy. We all know the incredible saga that went on with him. And now Mike Johnson. I mean, this is the effect of having crazy people in your coalition who absolutely will, they don't understand how politics has to work under our system, and they don't care. And they will do what they're going to do. And that's why the ACA thing can't happen, why they can't pass that, even though it might go a long way towards saving them, saving their majority. They don't care. They just don't care. You can find this going back all the way that I just said. So, you know, I don't know who might step in. Somebody will. There's always somebody who thinks they're, you know, they're better than anybody who came before them. But the same thing will happen. The same thing will happen because, as Driftglass says, you know, these people are crazy. And that, is, you know, and this is what they do. And I think the same thing happens with MAGA. It's just what Driftglass just hit on was, you know, after the financial crisis and all the failures of the Bush administration and the fact that they were, the Republicans were in the dirt, they were so unpopular, nobody liked them. And Obama had this big, I mean, he actually had a mandate. He got a, you know, a large majority voted for him. And what did they do? Did they learn their lesson? Did they hunker down and go, you know, hey, you know, I mean, they'd had a big autopsy where they said we need to be nicer to immigrants, et cetera, et cetera. They didn't listen to any of that. They formed the Tea Party, and they are they were crazy. And then the Tea Party morphed into MAGA, and here we are. And I think Driftglass is absolutely right that this is going to take a huge repudiation, something so big electorally that they are in the wilderness for a long period of time. And sadly for all of us, that probably requires a major crisis in order to bring that about. That's my cynical. Sorry, I'm being so cynical here at the end of the year, at the Christmas season. But I mean, this is what I'm looking at, well, is something, you know, I mean, Trump hasn't done it yet. I mean, yes, he's in the 30s, but, you know, are people still voting Republican? Are they still, does he still have a, you know, a base of support? Yes, he does. And, you know, I think that base of support will find a way to, you know, rebrand themselves down the road into some other crazy, wild, extreme faction. You know, it's just how they are.
I got to get to a break here, but speaking of repudiation, we'll come back with Digby and Driftglass more on all of this and on the Epstein files, maybe Venezuela, if there's time, on 2026 elections and gerrymandering. Well, we'll see what we have time for. All of that is straight ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
You're listening to the broadcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the broadcast. Maybe I'll see it when I believe it. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Our final broadcast of 2025 with our special guests, Heather Digby Parton of Salon, and of course, the great Driftglass of the Pro Left podcast. Also, we've got our last Green News Report of the year coming up in a bit with
Desi
Doyen. Unless time runs out. No, we'll just push it into January. Don't worry.
Sure.
Okay, so as we go to air, we are just one day away from what is supposed to be the congressionally mandated, presidentially signed law requiring the Department of Justice to release all of the Epstein files in their possession to Congress. Thankfully, we're going to be off for the next couple of weeks, so I don't have to slog through whatever's coming tomorrow. Driftglass, is it even conceivable that these files won't be redacted to within an inch of their lives, or otherwise just missing huge chunks of stuff regarding Donald Trump, Jeffrey Epstein's best friend for years and years?
No, not possible. because this is, I mean, Venezuela is stupid Iraq, and the Epstein files are stupid Watergate, because there's tapes, there's evidence, there's, you know, abundance of incriminating stuff. And rather than being clever, it's just going to be blunt force attempt to redact it, lie about it, distract people. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, given my proclivity in blogging and some of the topics I cover, I have gotten a whole lot of emails today about, did you know that David Brooks is in the Epstein files? And so that's a different topic for a different day. But, you know,
you just decided to drop David Brooks in there to the Epstein files just because?
As one of my readers says, sometimes the best gifts don't come wrapped, you know?
So you hate David Brooks that much that you're willing to open me up to a lawsuit because you want to mention that David Brooks is in there.
He is in the file.
There was the new
tranche that was released today by the House Democrats.
Oh, Desi wants to get us sued as well. Okay. Really? David Brooks is in the Epstein files? Yep. That's terrible. I never liked that guy. All right, go ahead.
Anyway, there's no way this won't be hemmed and hawed, and it's under audit like my taxes. And it's, I think there was some language in there about what's legally permissible. And we're going to decide based on all the corrupt judges and all the corrupt DOJ people we have, what's legally permissible is anything that doesn't involve Trump. But, and it'll only add fuel to the fire. It'll only make things worse. And this is, you know, they're trapped. They really have painted themselves into a corner from which there is no way out other than, you know, blowing everything up, because there's no way to get the past the Epstein files, because as we've talked about on the show before, that's a load-bearing lie of theirs. That is a solemn promise he made to his people. And the more he hedges, the worse it gets for him.
Digby, what do you think we're going to get, if anything, regarding the Epstein files after the statutorily mandated release date, I think, of December 19?
Well, I think Driftglass is perfectly right. I mean, this is, you know, of course, there's going to be redacted. There's going to be, you know, all of this. But he's right. They can't escape this. There's something. I mean, come on. It's a sex scandal. I mean, you know, this is the life's blood of scandals. This is in American politics. I mean, that this is just the way it works. And Donald Trump, on some sort of lizard brain level, understands this, which is why he's so, you know, he's been running from it from the very beginning. You know, Susie Weil said something in her Vanity Fair, you know, profile or whatever it was, about, you know, that she tried to say, well, you know, we saw it and Donald Trump is in them, but he hasn't been in, he wasn't doing anything awful. She said, I'm going, okay, define awful, Susie.
Right.
Because in Donald Trump's case, that's a pretty elastic sort of a concept. But,
and also, does know, she know about, does she, you know, did she see everything? You know, is she telling the truth? All of that stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, and she went on to say, you know, well, Bill Clinton was, you know, the president was wrong. It was the only time she said he was wrong, and that he claimed that Bill Clinton had been to the island 28 times and he'd never been there. But also she said, and I think this is really interesting, she said, well, you know, they were young men in the 90s, just a couple of playboys. Well, first of all, Donald Trump was in his 50s. You know, I mean, it's not like he was, you know, I mean, if that's young, okay, you know, whatever you say.
Good news, that's good news for me. Yeah.
I guess, yeah, me too. Yeah, but, you know, nonetheless, I don't know that anybody, most people would agree with that.
Okay.
But, you know, she's sort of acknowledging that they were hanging out. And then there's this story in the New York Times about how, you know, he was considered Donald's best friend.
Yeah.
And it's called How Epstein and Trump Bonded Over the Pursuit of Women. And, you know, Trump can't get away from this. I mean, granted, the MAGA people, they're all going to find a way to ignore it or pretend like, you know, what he did was different or whatever. But it doesn't work for anybody else. And it's just hanging over his head, as you know, that he's scared. He's running from it. He's trying to hide it. And, you know, all the stuff that he's been saying. And he just sounds like a very, you know, sort of muddled old man when he's trying to talk about this stuff. And I agree with Driftglass. This thing is not going to go away. It's going to be dogging him till the day he dies. This is going to be part of it. And so I'm all for just push it as hard as you can over and over and over again. Anything that makes him unhappy and uncomfortable is, you know, good for the country.
I've got just a very few minutes here, so I'm going to sort of jump ahead to sort of get some quick hits, some lightning responses from you on a couple of different items here. Driftglass, since you're sort of our Midwest correspondent out there in flyover country, what the hell happened in Indiana last week? Why didn't state Republicans there, to their great credit, by the way, why didn't they go along with Trump's redistricting demands, as they have done in, you know, Texas, Missouri, North Carolina so far? I mean, it's really the first large group of elected Republicans, and in a very Republican state, Indiana, that have seemingly en masse sort of dared to turn against Donald Trump. What is different about your neighbor state of Indiana, or does it suggest something is actually happening among the GOP overall, as Donald Trump is looking more and more like a lame duck at this point?
Well, two things. First, I don't think people anywhere but in the Midwest don't like to be pushed around and threatened and being told that, you know, if you don't do this, I'm going to withhold all federal funding from you and I'm going to primary the crap out of you. So there's that. Secondly, I can't
ignore the fact to mind it in Texas.
Well, you know, Texas is a whole different country, as they used to say.
True.
But and second, I can't ignore the fact that Mike Pence is from Indiana. And Mike Pence still lives in Indiana.
Yeah.
And Mike Pence does not like Donald Trump anymore because Donald Trump tried to have him killed. So there's a whole bunch of stuff, I would imagine, going on behind the scenes about, you know what, Things are about to jump off and get very bad. You don't want to be on the wrong side of history. This will not save us. It'll only make us look terrible. Maybe we give it a pass, show a little spine, very little spine, and just, you know, because Trump has a million other problems to deal with. So I think that might be it.
Well, I think that Trump in all ways is really sinking fast. I actually do. And I've heard this, you know, from people for years. Oh, he's going. He's whatever. And I haven't felt that way. I feel that way now, politically, physically, and mentally. But of course, I'm always wondering if I'm, you know, enjoying, you know, too much irrational exuberance about all of that and what appears to be a presidency sort of falling apart in slow motion, that maybe not even very slow motion at this point. So I'm wondering, I'll get this from both of you, all three of you, if you want, although we'll have to be quick.
Yes.
Wondering your thoughts about that in general as we move into the new year. Do you see anything on the horizon that can or will sort of right the Trump GOP ship at this point as we enter midterm season proper next year? We'll start with you, Bill.
The total aggregation of scandals, corruption, theft, treason, screw-ups, ACA. When you think of that, think of Ricardo Montalban in the last reel of Wrath of Khan. No, you can't get away. Trump is now lashed to all of his disasters, and he's going down hard and fast. And I think the calculation is now, how quickly can we separate ourselves from this catastrophe? And the answer is they can't. They're all lashed to him. And as he goes down, he's taking the party down with him. So that's what I think. He is doomed by his own hubris, by his own mistakes, by his own lies.
Desiree, is there any way out at this point for this guy?
I have no idea. For me, this is where I think we're, as a nation, in uncharted territory. So I have no idea how we navigate out of it, except for, you know, voting. That's it.
Oh, there's that. Heather Digby Parton, anything you see on the horizon that might save him? That stupid Iraq war in Venezuela that Bill mentioned, perhaps.
That's what I was just going to say. I mean, I think everything that Bill said is correct, and Desi too. But I also think that there's always a possibility. It's a roller coaster with Trump. You never know. You're feeling good.
Yeah.
You're up at the top, and then all of a sudden, boom, something happens. So, you know, I don't ever want to get too, you know, sure of myself in this stuff. A major crisis, like maybe a big terrorist attack or this war in Venezuela, I assume that these things, you would logically say that that Trump is the guy in charge. And if you don't like what you're seeing, that, you know, you're going to blame him. But I don't know that. You know, there's the rally around the flag thing, you know, does happen. And we've seen it many times before. Republicans are champing at the bit for some kind of more bloodletting. So who knows?
Yeah, let's not forget how wildly unpopular George W. Bush was in the first year of his presidency up until 9/11, and then everything changed for years and years thereafter. All right, guys, we have got to get out. I cannot thank both of you enough for all of the time you have spent with us over this past year on this program. I hope we will continue to be able to do so in the new year. You both are fantastic. Heather Digby Parton from what's it called? Hullabaloo. There we go. Digby's Hullabaloo. You can find that at digbysblog.net. You can also find her, of course, at salon.com and on the blue skies at Digby56. Driftglass can be found with his weekly podcast, proleftpod.com. You can also follow his blog at driftglass.blogspot.com and on the blue skies at Driftglass. Thank you guys so much. We will talk to you in the new year. Have a warm, wonderful, and safe holiday.
You too. Thanks
you
for
too,
having
man.
Me.
Thanks, guys. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being had. All right, we'll take a quick break, and we will be back with Desi Doyen and our last Green News Report of the year. Straight ahead, I'm Brad Friedman. You are listening to The Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
Well, Desi Doyen, are you looking forward to stopping the world for a couple of weeks so
just
you don't have to produce the Green News Report and try to keep up with that madness every day of the week?
Well, I still have to keep up with it, but, you know, it's slightly easier than having to talk about it. Yes.
All right. Well, anyway, let's get to it. Our last Green News Report of 2025.
This battle is just getting started.
Democrats and scientists vow to fight White House plan to dismantle nation's crown jewel of climate science. The EU and Ford back off transition to EVs. Plus, global warming is transforming the Arctic faster than scientists expected.
All of those disturbing stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And he made up the slogan, Drill Baby Drill.
Actually, it was coined in 2008 by then GOP Chair Michael Steele before being used endlessly by failed vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin. But hey, if you're a 28-year-old White House press secretary who was 11 at the time. Sure, Donald Trump made it up. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I know you got a lot to get to as we wrap up our Green News Report for the year, so have at it.
Well, first up, Donald Trump ordered a blockade on sanctioned oil tankers going to and from Venezuela this week, escalating his threats against Venezuela's president. In remarks to reporters on Wednesday, Trump explicitly referred to seizing Venezuela's vast oil reserves and mineral resources, effectively saying the quiet part out loud.
That he's going to steal the oil.
Here in the U.S., shocking news. The Trump White House announced it is moving to dismantle the world-leading National Center for Atmospheric Research, or NCAR, in Colorado, ridiculously calling the center a source of, quote, climate alarmism. NCAR has revolutionized weather forecasting and climate modeling with crucial, life-saving research that benefits Americans and the economy. Dismantling it would be a major blow to climate research globally, as scientists say time is running out to address climate change. Yale University scientist Jeff Masters warned, quote, climate change is going to kick our butts if we lose NCAR at a time when climate change is increasing extreme weather events that are capable of crashing the economy. Science advocates are calling on the public to contact their representatives. Democratic Colorado Congressman Joe Neguse vowed to fight the move, saying,
I think the announcement is deeply dangerous. I think it is reckless, it's short-sighted, and ultimately unlawful. It has nothing to do with the work that's being done every day at NCAR, which is life-saving and critical for our national security, and everything to do with politics.
Yeah, and the weird thing is it has as much to do with Donald Trump's denial of climate change as it does with Trump's interest in trying to free someone from jail in Colorado who's serving 9 years, a MAGA lady, for trying to defraud the 2020 election.
At the North Pole.
Santa?
No. Global warming is transforming the Arctic faster than expected, according to the new Arctic report card that the Trump administration surprisingly allowed federal scientists to publish this week. Snow season is dramatically shorter. Sea ice is thinning and melting earlier. Rising ocean heat is reshaping ecosystems. Precipitation is increasingly falling as rain, not snow. And melting of the Arctic's permafrost is washing toxic mineral runoff from the soil into more than 200 rivers across northern Alaska, turning them rusty red, polluting drinking water, and threatening vital salmon habitat.
Santa is not going to like that at all.
In other news, the European Union will walk back its 2035 deadline to phase out gasoline-powered vehicles after heavy lobbying from its ailing auto industry. U.S. automaker Ford announced it is also backing off from electric vehicles and will take a nearly $20 billion write-down in the wake of the Trump administration and congressional Republicans dismantling key manufacturing and consumer incentives.
Industry analysts warn Trump's policies will harm U.S. competitiveness as global markets continue to shift to electrification, with China reaping the rewards.
Yeah, China ain't backing off of EVs, are they?
Nope. And finally, a bit of hope as we close out this difficult year. In a recent broadcast, renowned climate scientist Dr. Michael Mann explained why he remains optimistic about the climate fight based on his decades of climate research.
The obstacles aren't physical. They're not technological. They're political. And political obstacles can be overcome. The only way you're going to prevail is if you fight the good fight. And that's what we've got to do.
Count me in. We'll continue fighting the good fight in the new year. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on social medias, especially Blue Sky at Green News Report. We will be off until after the new year. We look forward to seeing you then. Until then, please keep us in mind for your year-end giving. We are 100% listener-supported at bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Happy holidays. This has been your Green News Report. Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you for making all of us fighters, Desiree Doyen, with your Green News Report throughout the years.
Yep. Keep fighting. Keep the faith.
We're going to try. Thanks. And thanks to my guest today, of course, Heather Digby Parton of Salon, Driftglass of the Pro Left podcast, and all of you for your support. Listeners, supporters, donators, callers, guests, and of course, our affiliate stations. Thank all of you for helping us stay on your public airwaves over this past year. It has been, as I always say, an honor, and it really has been. As you heard that handsome fella say there in the Green News Report, we are going to be off until after the new year. But yes, we are 100% listener supported. So please do keep us in mind for your end of year giving. You can go to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves into 2026, whether you like it or we like it or not. We'll be back, I think, unless when we return, Los Angeles is burning down again.
Okay, let's not do that
as it
part.
Was last year. Yeah, let's see if we can skip that part. All right, anything else, Desiree?
No, but again, let's. So we'll all get through this together. That's the important part.
We will. And in the meantime, have a wonderful, warm holiday, whatever it is you are celebrating or not celebrating. We'll see you in the new year. Until then, you can find me via email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. On the social medias, you will find me at the Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next year, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.